Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 248 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
How are you doing?
I'm alive.
Oh, my gosh.
I live.
Yes. So for those of you following along at home, I mean, we try to cover it well, but we have both had sickness in our homes and in our lives.
Yes.
And in our voices over the last couple of weeks. So recording.
Yeah, we both went out for like, we were both taken out for like essentially a week.
Yeah.
And one not, right after the other.
Not the same week. So
no, thankfully.
So you will hear it in our voices, but we are here with you today. We are talking about today 10 things we love about raising siblings. So about a month ago, we did an episode called 10 Things We Love About Toddlers. And that you all seem to love that out there. But the idea behind this is sometimes there are frustrations or phases of motherhood that don't feel so lovable and that kind of get a bad rap, or that we like to, you know, complain about and vent about. Toddlers came first to mind.
Yeah, that was like already in our minds. We're just like, yep, let's do something on that. Yeah.
So not to sugarcoat something that is genuinely challenging, because you all know that's not what we do here. But I do think it's interesting to, when we're in a challenging phase, to try to look for the positives. And Megan, will you talk a little bit about when you did this over the holidays? Because we had a lot of listeners write to us when you mentioned this.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of almost inspired this series, this 10 Things We Love About series.
Yeah. So I was coming into what was now my fourth holiday since separating, and coming into it being single, I somehow have not made it, like I've dated a lot, but I've never made it through a holiday with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I came into this one single and decided to kind of intentionally be single about it and wait until after the holiday before I resumed any dating style activities or anything like that. So I was keeping a journal about the things that I thought were, that I was grateful for, that made like things that were positives about being single at the holiday or anytime. And it was helpful, you know, like, it's helpful to look and say, this is one thing, whether for me it was the passenger side of my bed has my cat and my book in it. And that's cool. Like, I like that. Like, that was sometimes something like that. Or I can devote as much of my time as I want to my kids during the holiday. And otherwise, it might be feel a little bit, you know, conflicted and stuff. So it was really helpful to do that through the holiday. So I think that did kind of spark this idea of like, maybe instead of just gritting your teeth and suffering through something that's not ideal, a phase that you're maybe not super happy about, you can always find something.
Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah. And we know with a gratitude practice that there's even science behind that when we right. are noticing the little things. So I think we will continue to do this 10 things we love about and just, you know, highlight different seasons or different challenges. I picked raising siblings because in my house right now, I will just be really honest, there's a lot of bickering. And it's funny because sibling fighting has never been a huge trigger for me. You know, when they were little tiny and, you know, taking toys or pushing each other, I just felt like that was par for the course. It's not that I loved it, but it didn't grate on me. And I think with the personalities of my kids, my second and third kids, Reed and Violet, did go through a phase where they just were oil and water. But I don't know. I feel like right now, and I'm sure you can relate, Megan, the bickering has reached this. It's a very much more mature intellectual bickering that yep. just is constant in the background. Uh-huh. And I find myself being like, guys, why are you opting into this conversation? Like, why? Whose idea is it to fight about this? It doesn't make any sense. There's nothing at stake. Like, why are you laying down yeah. arms about something? It's like, it'll be the most random hypothetical situation, or they do a lot of correcting each other, like for no reason. So maybe, can you give me a little, like, do you know what I'm talking about? This kind of bickering?
Yeah. So the older and smarter the kids get, the more obnoxious the bickering gets. It's bickering for sport, really.
I think it's
often boredom, or it's like almost reflexive. Like they're not even thinking before they do it.
No.
They just jump right into it. And to them, like, it's just like white noise to them.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't bother them at all that they're always just at each other's throats. But like, especially in a family where you really want that harmony between older kids and you want everyone to get along. So it's partly like just annoying.
Yes.
And then it's also partly like disappointing, yeah. You know, so it's like the two sides of the same coin. I remember having, and some of my children at specific ages have been worse than others about perpetuating mm-hmm. that stuff. And I have definitely had to ask the question, like, why is this happening?
Yes.
Like, why do you care? Why is this a conversation? And they don't have any answer for it.
Right.
It's not. Yeah. So I am with you. It is a phase that can last longer than you'd like and be more annoying the longer it goes on.
And I think you're so right. White noise is a perfect descriptor because they are not emotionally traumatized by this bickering.
Right.
In the way that, you know, there are some sibling dynamics where it does feel like the relationship is almost at stake. One of them is really picking on or being bullied, or there's some like jealousy dynamic. This doesn't feel like that. It feels like the stakes are very low, but it's the white noise background. And I think you're right. There's a sport aspect to it where they're honing mm-hmm. their debate skills. They're jockeying for like intellectual power almost. And like,
yep.
they do a lot of, yeah, like correcting each other, like even correcting each other's grammar or the way that they said something, mm-hmm. or it's just like, oh my gosh, you guys. Reed and Violet right now are sitting in the third row of the minivan. We did some seat shuffling and Violet's booster ended up back there. And something about the proximity, it's like they get in the car after school and they just start. It's just nonstop. And they wake up in the morning and it just starts. So anyway. So I did pick 10 things we love about raising siblings as a little way for myself to remember the reasons why it's fun and fulfilling to have a house full of siblings. And this is also a good time to mention, of course, that if you are intentionally or not by choice raising an only child, we know there are both gifts and also hard things that come along with that. We actually have a great episode in the archives about raising only children. So we're coming at this because this is what we know. We are raising packs of siblings. You have five.
Yes.
I have three. This is not to say that raising siblings is better than not raising siblings. It's just mostly that Sarah needs a pep talk about why it's great to have a house full of siblings.
Well, and I guess if you have only children, you can just listen to this rant and vent part at the beginning and then turn it off and feel really good about yourself. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, let's take a break and then we will dive into 10 things we love about raising siblings.
We are excited to welcome back the March of Dimes as a sponsor today in honor of National Birth Defects Prevention Month, which just wrapped up in January. Sarah, this is an organization we've worked with before and one that we love for the work they're doing to help moms and babies.
Yes, March of Dimes is a great organization, and each year they partner with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to generate awareness among women, families, and healthcare providers about actions they can take to help prevent birth defects. It turns out that birth defects actually affect about one in every 33 babies born in the United States each year. That's 120,000 babies. And look, we know not all birth defects can be prevented, but we also know that March of Dimes is the leader in getting information out there about the things women can do to increase their chances of having a healthy full-term pregnancy and a healthy baby.
Yeah, one great tip from the March of Dimes is to take a multivitamin with 400 micrograms of folic acid every day, even before you become pregnant. So if it's taken before and throughout pregnancy, folic acid, which is a B vitamin, is proven to help prevent serious birth defects of the brain and spine. It's also a good idea to eat foods that contain folate, the natural form of folic acid, including lentils, green leafy vegetables, black beans, and orange juice.
Yes, get that folic acid, friends. So the theme for Birth Defects Prevention Month 2020 is best for you, best for baby. And we love helping the March of Dimes get this message out. They support research, lead programs, and provide education and advocacy so that every baby can have the best possible start. You can follow and share the hashtag best for you, best for baby. That's with the number 4. You can find those on social media platforms. And for more information, visit marchofdimes.org/themomhour. Again, that's marchofdimes.org/themomhour.
Well, I want to say thank you so much to everyone for the great feedback on our new podcast club for listeners of The Mom Hour. It has been so fun to see this so well received in our community, and we've been getting some questions about it. So we wanted to clear a few things up.
Yes, the biggest thing we're hearing is like, hey, I would love to do this, but none of my real life friends listen to The Mom Hour, or they don't even listen to podcasts. And that's one thing that we do want to clear up. So this podcast club is totally for you and your real life friends, regardless of whether they've ever even heard of us. We use the podcast as a starting point, and we teach you how to teach them how to access it. But it's much more about you hosting a fun mom's night in your home to further the conversation about motherhood.
Right. So if you have a handful of friends you'd invite to a wine night or a book club, you've got a group for this. You just download our host kit, and it gives you everything from language to use on the invitations to printable name tags so that you can host without stress. And we help you facilitate the group discussion with a special audio recording just for the club gatherings. and a discussion guide for you to lean on, kind of like those book club guides you see at the end of a book.
The Mom Hour Podcast Club download kit is available now at themomhour.com/club. And here's something we're doing just for the first few listeners who not only download the kit, but actually host a gathering. If you send us an email at least 5 days before your event with a little bit of information about who's coming and what your group is like, we'll record a custom audio message that you can play for your guests. We can't do this for everybody forever, but shoot us an email at club@themomhour.com when your gathering is on the books, and we'll make it happen. Again, to find out more about the podcast club and download your kit, head to themomhour.com/club.
Okay, Megan, I'm having you go first. What is one thing you love about raising siblings?
So one thing I thought of, and I know this is different in certain families, but at least in my family, none of the kids look that much alike if you really took them apart. Like if you said coloring or like hair and eye color or features or whatever, they all have different features. They all have different, like a range of hair colors and eye colors. But if you put them all in a room, it's like, oh, you see that they're all part of the same clan. And I love that. And I think that's a very similar or a very common thing with multiple siblings where it's like, you wouldn't necessarily, like if someone did a like a sketch, what's like a, like they do at the police station.
Yes.
Where there's been a crime.
A composite.
Like, a composite. Thank you. Like you wouldn't necessarily put two of those together and say they look related. But then when you see them as part of the whole, it makes sense. It's just this weird, like there's a samesiness to them all, even though they're all very different. And that's something I've really, I just find fun to check out.
Do you remember when they were babies, like as you added each baby, do you remember looking for similarities or looking for sibling resemblances or did it more happen as they got older?
No, I think it was more when they were in newborns. And I will say they all had a, there were a lot of similarities in them as newborns, actually. They all had the, there was just certain features that were strong when they were newborns, particularly Isaac, Owen, and Isaac and Owen really had a very similar look. And maybe I'd throw Clara in there too. But like then as they got older, they all really took on their own look. Like I wouldn't say any of them at a year old looked a whole lot like any other one at a year old. Even the ones who look more similar now really went through phases where they looked very, very different. Some were very fair and some had curly hair and some had really chubby cheeks and like they all were just different. And so now it's kind of fun to see them all in this group and go, oh yeah, like they all look like they belong together, but none of them is like the spitting image of any other one.
Yeah, I love that. And I also have kids who don't look a whole lot alike. And I came from a family where my siblings and I don't look a whole lot alike. I find it fascinating when people do have those those families where they're all, they look like carbon copies of one another. And I mean, I've heard that there are genetic traits that make siblings look alike, or there are families where that happens and then others where they don't look so much alike. So I do find that really interesting.
Well, in my family, what's interesting is my oldest two siblings are just built differently. So my sister, Catherine, and my brother, Buck, are 10 and 8 years older than me. And they look more alike. Like there's something about their face shape and like their size. They're both a little more slight and they just look alike. I can't describe it. And then my brother John and I look very much alike. Like we both have long, skinny feet and legs and freckles and people see us out and they know that we're related. But then if you put the four of us together, like it's very obvious we're all siblings.
Yeah.
But we don't, but the two pairs are very separate in the way we look. And I don't understand it. People will look at my sister and I and say, I can totally tell that you're siblings, but if you really look at us, we don't look that much alike. It's something, mannerisms, maybe there's just certain family dynamics, but that's kind of fun to watch.
I think it's really fun to watch. I have this memory of having newborns and just almost seeing the previous newborn's face in that newborn. Like you said, that there is a, like, this is the stamp of what my newborns look like, even though as they got older. And I, when I had the third, when I had Violet, you know, iPhone photography and photo collages, everything had just gotten a lot easier. So I remember doing a lot of side-by-side collages of all three at the same age. You know, I would do it like, this is all of them. And they really do look pretty different, but there is that
look.
I love that. Okay. Well, something I love about raising siblings is also kind of baby related. And that is when a new sibling, so a second or subsequent sibling, will start to not only recognize their big sibling's voice, but almost prefer any kind of exposure or interaction to a big sibling almost over mom or dad. And I remember it happening maybe 3 or 4 months old, maybe a little bit older. I'm not sure, but I just have this memory of the baby craning their head, or you'd be nursing the baby and they'd pop off and just look around because they'd hear the sound of their big sibling. And it was like the best thing that had ever happened to them. And it was this kind of the earliest realization that there's a relationship. And I know this is going to be a recurring theme today, but a relationship that's really separate from you as a mom that they will build with each other. But it just is so cute the way. So my sister has a 2-year-old and an 8-month-old. And just the way a baby will, their eyes will track, and they'll just like, there's nothing they'd rather hear or see than whatever that sibling is doing. And usually the sibling is a completely ordinary, like, you know, not just super, well, they're just a toddler or whatever.
The baby is thinking like, will that be me? I almost can see the wheels turning in their head. Like, that's what they're aspiring to be. They're not really aspiring to be us, like the adults. They're aspiring to be the toddler because they're the one doing all the interesting stuff, right?
Yeah. No, I love it. And there's something about, I mean, it takes a couple months, I think, because of course they only have eyes for mom and milk and stuff for a little while. And then I just remember like, oh, they're recognizing their sibling's voice. And then all of a sudden they're not just recognizing it. They're like preferring it, looking for it, you know, and so it's just the cutest.
It is very, very cute. Well, obviously we can't, I mean, any topic about siblings is going to focus on a lot of relationships. So my next one does as well. And that is watching the siblings develop tight relationships with different siblings and then watching that change. So in my family, and we've talked about this on the show a lot, there's 2 sets of boys, you know, and really for a long time, especially when there were only 2, those were the tightest relationships. Like the kids who were 2 or fewer years apart,
right,
just naturally spent more time together. They play with the same toys. They play with the same groups of kids. Like, but then what's really happened over, you know, since they kind of all got into like upper elementary and later, is those alliances started to shift over time. And so, for example, Will and Isaac, who are 4 years apart, when they were about 16 and 12, started bonding over music. And so that's something that they share now that they're 20 and 16. But it was really adorable. Like, you'd see them sitting on the couch together with like sharing earbuds as Isaac was like introducing his favorite music to Will. And Clara and Jacob are really close, and they're 11 years apart. And they just get along. Like, they understand each other. And I think Jacob feels a little bit of protectiveness because she's the littlest. And, you know, she's also in a time of life when she's being kind of snubbed by the older ones. Like, she's very self-aware about it. But she'll say, well, I know that I'm the littlest, and it's like everyone's job to be mean to me right now.
like, I know this is normal.
Yes, she knows it's normal. In fact, they'll tell her it's normal. They'll say, we're being mean to you for your own good. You know, she'll say, I know I can sometimes talk too much and my jokes aren't always very funny. It's like she sees them as like shepherding her into being a bigger kid. Yeah. And so she almost sees it as like benevolent in a way. But I think that Jacob's always got her back. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't feel any need to like, you know, he's the oldest. He doesn't feel any need to like crap on her because she's the littlest. Like, he has the whole family under him. Like, he doesn't need. So it's really cute to watch, and it changes. It changes all the time. And I'm curious what it'll look like in 5 years, like who will be like the ones hanging out or, you know, who will be spending time together. I don't know. Have you noticed that in your family?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the biggest shift was and my kids are more evenly spaced. It's just 2 years and then a little over 2.5 years. But the biggest thing for a long time, and I've talked about it, was having, you know, 2 older kids and a baby, or two kids and a toddler. And it just felt like, and then the personalities of Reed and Violet, number 2 and number 3, are just really, really opposite. So it took forever. And then probably when they were about 5 and 7, so like a couple years ago, you know, Allegra started aging out of little kid stuff. And now it's definitely a preteen and 2 kids. And so I think for me, it was just the shock of these 2 kids who had never related, and they're, you know, different genders and the whole thing. All of a sudden are very buddy-buddy, and they even kind of look a little bit more alike than they used to, and they play in a way that's very, you know, elementary school, and now, you know, the odd one out is the older. So yes, I mean, I've definitely seen it.
I think I've told you before that it's been interesting to see the boy, Owen and Will, well, all of their cousin Jack, is in between Owen and Will.
Yes.
And it's been really interesting to watch, like, where the alliances lie, like, who hangs out more. So for a while, it was Jack and Will. And now it's really Jack and Owen. And like next year, they'll all be in high school. So will they all hang out together again? Like, it's really hard to say, but it changes a lot. And having Jack's almost like the control. He's like the guy in the middle. It's like he's like the monitor, like the thing that tells us kind of which way the wind is blowing as far as the maturity level of the other two.
Well, someone has to either age up or play down, you know, like play up or play down. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So something else I love about raising siblings, I love, and this doesn't happen all the time, but when my kids are fighting or arguing and something can resolve itself using whatever I have tried to teach them and impart to them over the years, whether that's like, you know, taking turns or apologizing or talking something through. And like, I can be in the other room and just hear a squabble go down. And it could be a big one. You know, someone's crying, someone's yelling. And then I just wait a beat and I listen to them in their own kind of imperfect way, figure something out. And it's like, it feels like I won like an Olympic gold medal. So I guess I'm putting that out there because if it's never happened to you yet,
it could happen.
It may take years, and all of the conflict resolution that you're doing. And I don't think there's one right way. I know some parents are more hands off and some are really involved. And I am here to say, I think there's many ways to teach kids to resolve conflict. So I don't subscribe to one particular method, but whatever you've been trying to do over the years and whatever you've been trying to model and however you've been trying to get them to get along, it may take years, but you will be in the other room one day and you'll hear somebody apologize to their sibling, or you'll hear them offer a compromise, or you'll hear them even, you might even just hear them walk away and say, I'm not, you know, I need to like remove myself. But whatever it is, you'll hear it happen and you will feel like a million bucks.
Yeah, that is so true. And I mean, all of these things, they're like hashtag mom goals, right?
Yes.
Yes. But I mean, that will happen at some point. And it could be happening now and you're not seeing it. Mm-hmm. Like maybe like there's some hope there that it's already happening and you're just not noticing it.
Well, or like little bits of progress. The kid who used to hit as their automatic, maybe they're not hitting. Maybe they're still, you know, instigating or, you know, crying or whatever. So yeah, that progress is glacially slow. And if you have kids whose personalities don't mesh, and I do have a pair of those, it just can seem like it's never going to happen. But it's really cool when it does. And I'm sure you get to hear all kinds of more adult arbitration and, you know, like things happening that are just, you know, completely independent of you.
It is. And I'm thinking back to like when we've had these conversations before about not intervening or not intervening too soon. And I think sometimes like you almost have to wean yourself off. So like it's a win if you usually would jump in and break up a fight right away, but you give it 10 seconds next time, like that's a little win. So every little step you can take to kind of start removing yourself from the process gets you toward where you're trying to go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just going to be honest. When I had a house full of little kids and was trying to launch my writing career, or at least, I mean, by the time they were all in the house, it was already well launched, but I was still trying to keep it going. And it really took the pressure off that I had this big group of built-in playmates. Mm-hmm. Sarah, we've talked about on the show before about our strengths and weaknesses as moms. And while I think that I've always been great with like the emotional nurturing and guidance part, and I never really minded changing diapers, doing the dishes, like that stuff has never bothered me. Mm-hmm. But playing is just a skill set. Like with a little kid, I just never developed that skill set. And nor did I really want to.
Yeah.
And it was really nice to have siblings to take some of that burden off. They all definitely preferred each other as playmates, like early on. And that was just fine by me. I had no desire to sit and play. And so I remember a couple times, though, having this conversation where a kid would kind of come in and hang around me. And I'm like, what did I make you all those brothers for? go play with them.
Go find one.
Go find one of those brothers. There's so many. Just go pick one and play with them. And so that was never that hard. Like sometimes it would be because they were feeling left out or whatever, and I'd have to go kind of help smooth things over. But most of the time they had no trouble finding ways to amuse themselves. And that really helped. That took, we all have things that feel like a burden.
Yeah.
And that was a big burden unloaded, which is kind of funny because some people would think keeping up the laundry of five kids, or like the dishes from five kids, or, you know, the emotional support for five kids would be a burden. And for me, it really wasn't. I would much rather let them all play together and then me kind of come in and do the cleanup.
Yep.
And like fix all the hurt feelings afterward and stuff.
I mean, I can relate to a lot of this, and it's funny. I know we get so many questions about family size and adding another baby. And I know we've talked about one thing you hear when you decide to have three and not four or two is that, oh, there's going to be an odd man out. And for a long time, I really kind of dismissed that and thought, well, you know, it's not just odd and even numbers. Like you can't guarantee that any four will gel into two pairs. Right. And I think we've had a whole discussion about this. However, having just had three kids for a while now, I can say that there's a nugget of truth to the fact that there will sometimes be an odd man out. And I can really see how when you had four little boys, it was like, okay, now there's truly a pack. Like you've got to be able to find somebody. Whereas in my house, there have been more times when it's two playing and one on the outs. But there's also lots and lots of times when they will play together. And I just have to say, for the record, I am the same. I also do not enjoy most make-believe or get down on the floor ways of playing with a little kid. I'd rather go on a walk or go to the library or like do something. So that has also been a challenge in our house. And I was laughing when you were talking about you'd rather clean up the mess afterward. And I still to this day, if the three of them can find something to do, it's almost always a gigantic mess. Like they decide to get out like some kind of science experiment or like build a guinea pig fortress in the garage. Like it's always a spectacular mess. But if all three of them are involved for an hour and a half, I am much more willing to help with the cleanup. It's like, it's just a currency, right? It's a currency of time and mental space that.
And don't you also feel like when you're cleaning up, you still get to be like a mom? Like you're still in mom adult role. You're not playing this weird, like, am I mom or am I like six?
Yeah.
Like that's like that. I really kind of enjoy coming and cleaning up the mess because it just fits with like the way I like to be in the world. I like to kind of be a grown up and, you know.
Yeah. And it's your home and your space and you
exactly.
can, you know, put love and care into righting whatever wrongs have occurred.
have been committed against it. I agree though. There is always some element, evens and odds of someone being, I think just the more people there are involved. So like, I think if there were four, there were still usually often someone left out.
Yeah.
And sometimes three can become the gang and one is left out. I would say Clara was probably the one who didn't quite fit in the, like the gang aspect as much. And like, not to say she was totally left out and no one played with her. It's just that she didn't necessarily want to play the same way, especially by that point. We're talking about four significantly older siblings, all boys.
Yeah.
So she was more of my sidekick. And it just worked out that the kind of stuff she wanted to do was very easy for me to work around.
Yeah.
It was a lot of crafting and drawing and like playing with little plastic things.
Yeah. Yeah. She was your little buddy.
She was my shadow.
Yeah. And there's elements of Violet in that as well for me. Okay. So we are going to take a break and get into more things we love about raising siblings in just a bit. So Megan, when we did our episode about healthy habits a while back, we talked about how to connect an activity that you do every day with a new habit you want to start. So have you had any luck doing that?
Yes. So our sponsor Ritual sent us Essential for Women multivitamin capsules, and I put them on my bedside table next to my water glass on top of my Kindle.
Nice.
I mean, I figure I do go to bed every night, right?
Yep. And
I read pretty much every night too. So it's really helped that positive habit stick. In fact, I'm almost out of capsules now and I really need to reorder because I like them a lot and it's definitely a healthy habit I want to keep.
Yes, I really like my Ritual vitamins too. It's great to know that I'm getting 9 key nutrients that women need to support good health. But I also really appreciate that Ritual makes it so easy because you get it all in just 2 small, easy to swallow capsules that are designed to be gentle even on an empty stomach, which is really great if your particular vitamin Ritual includes taking them first thing in the morning.
Yes, they really are easy to swallow. And I also love that there's a mint tab in every bottle so you don't get that fishy aftertaste that's common with a lot of omega-3s. Instead, you get kind of this like fresh little hit every time you pop a capsule.
I really love that little hint of mint. I love it. Ritual calls themselves the obsessively researched vitamin for women, and the Essential for Women delivers those specific nutrients that most people don't get enough of from food, like D3, omega-3, magnesium, and B12.
We've got a great deal for our listeners. Ritual is offering you 10% off during your first 3 months so that you can fill in the gaps in your diet with the Essential for Women multivitamin. Visit ritual.com/themomhour to get started. Again, that's ritual.com/themomhour for 10% off during your first 3 months.
We want to remind everybody about our Amazon store. If you've heard us rave about a product we love on this show and you can't remember what it's called or what episode it was from or where to find that link, chances are good that you'll find it at our store. So when you head to the Amazon storefront, we've got it all organized into categories. So there's like spring improvements. You could start fantasizing about how you'll redo your deck in the next month or two. There's like baby shower gift ideas. There's parenting books. There's a whole bunch more.
Yeah, we participate in the Amazon Affiliates program, which means that when you browse our shop and click through to make a purchase, we earn a little bit on each sale. So it's a great way to support the show by buying things you were interested in anyway. So just head to amazon.com/shop/themomhour or look for the link in the show notes and go ahead and check out our Amazon store. And hey, if you've bought anything from our store in the past, we would love to hear what you thought. Hit us up on Instagram or send us an email at hello@themomhour.com. And again, if you want to go to that store, it's amazon.com/shop/themomhour.
Okay, so shifting gears a little bit to something much more material. I love hand-me-downs. I love the clothing stories that come with raising siblings. And I have always, actually, even in my own clothing had a very kind of emotional or almost like metaphorical, like held on to significance with different articles of clothing. I have a lot of memories associated with clothing and outfits, and that even predates kids. But once I had kids, the ability to pass down clothes and then to remember things through clothing and even just the satisfaction of getting a lot of use out of something. I'm mostly picturing clothing, but it could also be your strollers and your car seats and your baby carriers and all of that. So there's just something, I can't explain it, just fulfilling or emotionally satisfying about that. And so hand-me-downs is one. And we had a lot of clothing that was passed down to my oldest from family friends or neighbors or you know, other friends. And so there would be articles of clothing that Violet wears now that were even somebody's before Allegra's. And so I love it. I love hand-me-downs.
I'm just going to steal this one for my next one as well, because I also love hand-me-downs. And the systems part of my brain, like you were saying, you like the idea of getting a lot of use out of something. There was something so satisfying to me back when, I mean, and this was a fleeting maybe 6 to 7 year period of my life, where literally everything passed down from oldest to youngest. Mm-hmm. It was like boom, 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 boom. So, and I had systems around it. So Jacob would wear it for a year or two. It would end up with Isaac. Then there'd be like a year in between where nobody really got it. And then it would go to Will and then it would go to Owen. And that lasted for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And it was so satisfying. Like, it satisfied all those things. My systems for putting things away seasonally meant I got to look at everything and touch everything. And that was really fun for me and nostalgic, like you said. But it was also like, wow, this is so efficient. Like, I am getting as much possible use as I can. Like, four kids are using each of these pieces of clothing. And then what happened is they all started growing at different rates.
Yeah.
And that completely, like, that fell out the window probably around the time, like, Will was getting into upper elementary school. Mm-hmm. The system broke.
Yes.
And so we kind of had to work around it. And some stuff passed down and some didn't. And also sometimes some kids ended up being a lot harder on their clothes. And so there was just, it became a little less reliable. But when it was, there was something about that that was just, like, amazingly satisfying to me. And now it's so fun because now that there's three giant boys, two young men and a giant teenager, and then a quickly growing other teenage boy, they still do sometimes share clothes. It's just changed a lot. Like, certain kids have almost sometimes adopted, like, the other one's entire wardrobe. Like, I remember one time Isaac got rid of almost everything, and then the kids kind of, like, all like vultures came in and
I love that,
picked out the stuff they liked the best and ended up, like, basically just co-opting his whole wardrobe. I think sometimes it's a little bit of a status symbol to, like, borrow a hoodie from your favorite sibling, like your favorite older sibling.
like wearing the colors of your, like wearing your boyfriend's Letterman jacket or something.
Yes, I have,
like,
totally
my favorite
seen
brother's
that.
Hoodie.
Exactly, yes. And so I've seen, like, there be some favoritism from certain kids towards borrowing or taking clothes from whoever they perceive as the one that they want to, like, confer respect upon.
Mm-hmm.
The sibling who gets the respect. So it's been really fun to watch. It's just very different. It is much more like, it's much more, like teenagery.
Yeah, and more of an exchange, more of a clothing swap than a line passing down. I think one thing that I love about it is it makes so tangible the growth that kids do, which of course you don't notice, like, day to day to day. Allegra's always been tall and big for her age. So she was always wearing a size or two sizes ahead, which means even though the girls are 4.5 years apart, they're sometimes 6 or 7 because Violet is about average for her size. But it was even longer than 4.5 years until Violet would fit into whatever Allegra had outgrown. And I remember putting away these bins. This is especially since we moved to California. Allegra was 6 when we moved. So I'd put away a bin that was like size 7, 8 or, you know, even 8 to 10. And it just felt like that, like Violet is never going to be this big. At the time, she was like 2 or something. And then every once in a while, I'll be like, hey, I think we could get down. And Violet gets so excited to get down a bin because it's like Christmas. You're going through all of these. And sure enough, like she's 7. She wears about her age. Like, so she wears like a 7, 8. I'm like, oh my gosh, I never thought you'd be this big. There's something about just acknowledging how much they physically grow, and the right. clothes are part of that. So it's really fun.
I love it.
So another thing that I love is I love just listening. And this is so funny because I started this whole episode talking about listening to them bicker. And this is really just the flip side of this. But I love listening to their conversations and specifically listening to them educate or school each other on something that one of them maybe feels more worldly or more informed about. And I think I noticed this especially because I was the oldest. So I didn't have anybody explaining the ways of the world to me unless it was my parents, but more likely it was my friends, right? Like my friends yes. and I would be off talking about something and I'd have something mature explained to me or whatever. But with the kids, I get to hear them explain to each other what a slang term means or what like some, and it's just like, first of all, it takes the pressure off me. I don't have yeah. to explain everything. And it's also kind of adorable when they don't really get it or they're
trying to say yeah. when they're wrong or like almost wrong. Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you don't have to jump in. Like they learn yeah. so much from each other. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like they're more comfortable asking each other sometimes. Sometimes they get self-conscious, like they want to be cool. Like they don't want to admit they don't know what something means, or they'll feel each other out. Like, do you know what that means? And a lot of times it's like right. a line in a show or like, you know, a music lyric or something, and like nobody totally quite has it right. So I love listening to those conversations, and I love knowing that they have somebody to school them in the yes. ways of the world. So
I love that too. That has been definitely a through line for me. And now they're all like too dang smart. That's one thing I will say with like, you probably will find that Violet is a lot more worldly wise.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm sure she is now than you could ever have imagined.
Oh, totally.
Allegra being at that age. And it's just like, well, what are you going to do about it? Like, it just is when kids have older siblings, they just know more.
Yes. And yeah. And the family of origin that I grew up in, because we're 2 years separated, my brother and I definitely remember like kind of being the older sibling to my brother and explaining things to him. But then we're 8 and 6 years older than my sister. So it was just two separate kind of. She was yes. so little that we weren't really like shepherding her along in that way, or at least I wasn't, being 8.5 years older. So I think it's fun with mine being more closely spaced. And you're right, Violet is just everything. The shows she's watched, the movies she's seen, the music she listens to. And it's fun. I don't relate because I was the oldest and I was pretty sheltered, but it's fun to see this little, like, you know, 7-year-old who knows her way around whatever topic.
Yeah, I think that's funny. I think I was similarly sheltered. My sister's 10 years older and my brother's, I just don't think, they were 8 and 4 years older. I just don't think things were being, I was very naive. Let's yeah. just put it that way. And my sister likes to tell a story about how she came home with when she was a teenager with a friend of hers. So she was probably 16 or 17 and I was 6 or 7. And I had put sanitary napkins all over my dolls because I thought they were diapers. Like, I thought they were diapers, yeah. I guess. So yeah, my sister and her friends never really let me live that down. And it was one of those like very obvious things that happen when one kid is that much younger yeah. than the other and yeah. is so naive. And like, it's not like she was teaching me yeah. about periods yeah. at that age. So, okay. So my turn.
Yep.
Another thing I love about siblings is how they kind of develop this shared language, kind of similar to what you were talking about earlier. Like, it doesn't have to involve me or include me when you were talking about eavesdropping and listening to kids work things out. And there's like even something beyond that. There's like the references and the inside jokes. My kids all have nicknames for each other that are silly. They're just so goofy and mm-hmm. and sometimes mildly inappropriate. And I have nothing to do with that. Like, that's all now their own world that they live in.
Yeah.
And I really just kind of, I'm on the outskirts. I don't try to kind of ingratiate myself into it too much. Like, it's not about me. And sometimes when I do try to like speak their language. I just end up being kind of the butt of the joke, which right. I accept that role. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
As long as they're good natured about it. But like, it just reminds me that no matter what happens to me, like later in their lives, they have each other. And yeah. this is a real connection with or without me. I'm obviously part of it. I'm an important part of it. But like, they have a whole thing going on that has nothing to do with me. And yeah. I really like that.
I love that. I love that a lot. Okay. Well, my final one is I just love that having siblings in your house is sort of like empirical proof that while you can contribute a lot to raising your kids, there is so much that is biologically programmed and hardwired in kids that is beyond your control. And this is true whether or not you're raising siblings, I believe. But when you are raising siblings, you just have the proof that you can, the control of the environment and the two parents. And, you know, there's so much that is the same of how they are raised, and yet they come out so different. And I think the more kids you have, the more, and I know you've talked about this, like when you've had two, you thought there were two different kinds of kids, like a Jacob yeah. kind and an Isaac kind. And then right. you had Will.
I was like, oh my gosh, there's a third category. Yeah. Wait, there's another.
Yes. Right. And so I think this is like bringing it all back to moms, right? Like, I think that relieves some of the pressure that you, that it's all on you to put out this fully formed, you know, grounded and happy human into the world. When you see that kids can be raised in the same household by the same parents and turn out so differently. And there's just so much, there's nature and nurture, I believe, but there is so much nature. And when you see it in front of you from how they look different, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, to how their personalities developed, I feel like it's a little bit of pressure off of us, right? Because like there's only so much we can do, and a lot of it is outside of our control. And so siblings, just having them in your house is just basically a daily reminder of that. Like,
yes,
we're off the hook for some of this.
Yeah, you're so completely right. I have five kids. I've raised them all similarly, and they're as different as could be, all yeah. five. Yeah.
I also think that the bigger the personality differences, I mean, then it's just more evidence to how hardwired some of this is. They just come out super different. But the bigger, the wider those personality gaps, the more interesting some of the sibling dynamics are, and the relationships and the fights and the and everything is just when you have super different kids.
Yeah. You know, and in some ways, I feel like the older they get, the more they kind of can almost like lean in on their own personality differences and become who they are even more and more. Mm-hmm. I've definitely seen that with when, like, I'm thinking of Jacob and Isaac in particular, because those were my first two, and their differences were so obvious to me and dramatic. In some ways, it could sometimes be difficult not to compare them or be annoyed by one whose personality traits were presenting in a particularly challenging way. See how diplomatically I put that? But now it's like, it's just who they are, and I'm just used to it. Like, I'm used to there being every kind of person there is. Well, or at least five kinds of people.
In a way, it's kind of like a gift to have really different kids, because I feel like there could be challenges having, let's say you had same gender, kind of similar personalities, close in age. I think the temptation to compare or to like try to parent them the exact same way would be actually greater and maybe hard to individuate. I think that's actually a real word.
It is. I've heard it before.
Yeah. It must be. So I guess we can see those wildly different oil and water personalities as at least permission for the kids to just be who they are. And for us as parents, like, we have no hope of parenting the same way.
Exactly.
Because it's so obviously different. So, super interesting.
And I think it makes them all pretty accepting of each other. Like, when they grow up with lots of different kinds of people, they grow up knowing that there are different kinds of people in the world, and that makes them like that knowledge on the outside of the world almost makes them more accepting of their siblings. And then that knowing their siblings makes them more accepting of the rest of the world.
I think you're so right. I'm glad you said that, because that is something I've tried to kind of lean in on, especially when my kids are talking about things they're good at or things that come easily to them. One of them, you know, is really good at math. And I just, you can't squash that. They just notice. Right. They notice when others are naturally gifted in certain areas. So I've just tried to lean in on that and use that as a way to say, look, we know in the world that certain things come more easily to some people. Certain things are harder for some people. certain people run anxious, certain people like to sleep in the mornings. And so, yeah, I agree. I think that's a it's great for kids to see that in their own families and then use that as a way to kind of build, I don't know, compassion or, you know, understanding about the whole world.
And I think if you don't ever make it competitive in a negative way in your house, then they can, they're actually kind of proud of each other for their strengths because everyone's strengths are celebrated. Whereas if like if the pie felt small or finite, you get this feeling that everyone's fighting over like the same piece of parental acceptance or sibling acceptance. But I have found that it can be very expansive and that like everyone can really be proud of everybody and really acknowledge everyone else's strengths. And like, I know that, you know, everyone is aware that there is a kid in my family who's extremely artistically gifted. And then there's another who's really, really, really smart. And like everyone knows and they're all proud of those people for that, those things. And because it doesn't take anything away from them.
I agree. And we've always just tried to pair the conversation about those kinds of inborn talents with the corollary, which is those kids sometimes are really have challenges in other areas that like nobody has it easy. We just have some things that come easy and some things that come harder. So I love that. That's a great place to wrap up. So this has been really fun and thanks everybody out there for listening. So just as a reminder, we have two new Spotify playlists for the month of February. And they are, one is called Toddler Parenting Helpline. And then the other is called Episodes That Feel Like a Hug. And so these are collections of our episodes. And in the case of the toddler playlist, we've also pulled in some episodes from other podcasters we love. And they're on Spotify. And so if you are going back through our archives, some people like to listen in order, but there's other fun ways to kind of delve into our archives, maybe by theme. And so that's the idea behind these Spotify playlists. And we kind of like Spotify. I mean, everybody has their own place that they're listening, but the fact that Spotify lets you make a playlist of podcast episodes, I think is so genius. So that's what we've been doing. And those are the two new ones for February.
Yeah, definitely go check those out. You can find the links in the show notes or you can get all of our playlists at themomhour.com/Spotify. We'll be back Sunday this coming weekend with a brand new More Than Mom episode and we'll talk to you then.